sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
Lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packin' mama, lay that pistol down. Oh, drinking beer in a cabaret, was I having fun? Until one night she caught me right, now I'm on the run.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packing, mama, lay that pistol down. Oh, I see you every night, Bing, and I'll woo you every day. I'll be your regular mama, and I'll put that gun away.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packing, mama, lay the thing down before it goes off and hurts somebody. Oh, she kicked out my windshield and she hit me over the head. She cussed and cried and said I'd lied and she wished that I was dead.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packing, mama, lay that pistol down with three tough gals. From deep down Texas way, we got no pals. They don't like the way we play. We're a rough, rootin', tootin', shootin' trio, but you're to see my sister Cleo. She's a terror, make no error, but there ain't no lassie fair, is what we tell her.
Lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packin' mama, lay that pistol down.
Corn, the revenuers came. The draw was slow, so now they know you can't do that to Mame.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packing, mama, lay that pistol down. Oh, singing songs in a cabaret, was I having fun? Till one night it didn't seem right, now I'm on the run.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packing, mama, lay that pistol
down.
Oh, pistol packing, mama, lay that pistol down.
This is Bruce Kaplan welcoming you back to another episode of Radio Masterpieces. Hope you're all having a fantastic weekend. We just listened to the great Bing Crosby and the Andrews Sisters. A lot of people think that Bing was born in Spokane because that's where he attended college, Gonzaga, and that's where he lived for a lot of his youth. But actually, Bing was a Tacoma native. He was born in Tacoma. I think the year was 1903. The Andrews Sisters were a wonderful group and made hundreds of hit songs, and so did Bing. And when they got together, boy, did they really tickle the ivories and get the music out there. Tonight, we're going to listen to an episode of The Inner Sanctum. It's from 1940s, and it was originally produced by Hyman Brown. And Hyman Brown later went on to produce the CBS Mystery Theater. And after that, we're going to listen to a wonderful episode of The Whistler. And it's called The Stray Dream. I think both of these programs tonight are real classics. If you, in the audience, would like to hear any of the programs from the 1940s or early 1950s, please don't hesitate to write to me at bruce@radiomasterpieces.com, and I'll sure try to answer you. Thank you so much for tuning in, and just again, enjoy the weekend. And now let's listen to our great shows.
Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Tell me, have you ever been alone with fear? Alone in the night and frightened? Well, here's Anne Shepherd in the role of Linda Dixon to tell us what happened to her.
It was a Friday night, and I think I was already a little nervous as I drove north into the mountains. It was the first day of my vacation. I started from the city early enough to arrive before nightfall, but my car was 6 years old and developed motor trouble. So now I was driving through the night with 50 miles more to go, and I was tired and nervous and irritated. And then I heard that siren in the distance. At first, I couldn't place it. And then I remembered the state prison was somewhere in the vicinity. The siren. That meant a prisoner had escaped. I reached over and turned on the radio. They were broadcasting an alarm.
I repeat, motorists are warned to be on the lookout for Lee Hartley, who escaped from the death cell at state prison at 9:15 p.m. He is 5'10", dark-haired, regular features, no distinguishing marks. Hartley is a confirmed killer. He is believed to be armed. Beware of Hartley. He would rather kill than eat. I better give you that again.
He would rather kill than eat. And that man was loose. I stared ahead at the lonely road spinning toward me through the windshield.
It has been established that Hartley was helped to escape from the outside by his sweetheart, Helen Hearn, a red-headed woman just as vicious as Hartley himself. It is thought that Hartley and the Hearn woman may have separated after the escape. All motorists are warned to beware of a dark-haired man and a red-haired woman, alone or together.
My hand was shaking a little as I turned off the radio. I looked in the car mirror and shivered. I, too, have red hair. There was a storm coming up, and I was driving into it. And the night was black, and I felt small and lonely and frightened in the car. Then I saw them in the mirror, the headlights sweeping up behind me. A car. It had come out of nowhere. It was pulling alongside, cutting me off. I cowered behind the wheel and then watched the door of that other car open. A man stepped out. Oh, I breathed a sigh of relief. It was a state trooper.
Driving all alone, miss?
Oh, yes, officer.
Sorry if I scared you. We're stopping all cars. Where are you heading for, miss?
Oh, I'm going up to Seven Lakes Hotel. That's near Carstairs. You see, I started out late from the city, and I'm having motor trouble.
Yeah, sure. Can I see your driver's license, please?
My driver's license, of course. Here, I've got it somewhere in my purse. I seem to be all fingers. That escaped prisoner, Hartley.
How'd you know about him?
Oh, well, I heard the prison siren. Then it came over the radio about Hartley and his red-haired girlfriend.
Say, you've got red hair, too.
Well, you don't think I'm that woman.
Find that license yet?
Well, I'm sure it's in here. So many... Oh, here, I've got it. Here's my license.
Thanks. What time did you say you left the city?
About 5 o'clock.
Took you a long time to get this far.
Well, I told you I had motor trouble.
Oh, I'm sure you did. Okay, Miss Dixon, here's your license. You can go ahead.
Thank you. Oh, darn. There it goes again.
More motor trouble.
No, it's the same thing the mechanic said it might have. There, it started.
You want to get that fixed first chance you get?
Yeah. It's late, though. All the service stations are closed.
Yeah, there's one that's open all night about 2 miles up the road.
Oh?
You better stop there. Bill Slater's place. He's a good mechanic.
Yeah.
He'll fix you up. Tell him Joe Nesbitt sent you.
Christ, thanks. I will.
Listen, Miss Dixon.
Yeah.
You be careful. Don't stop to give anyone a lift, man nor woman.
Don't worry. I won't. The night closed in on me again, but I didn't feel quite so nervous, knowing that the trooper was somewhere behind me on the road, and Bill Slater's service station ahead. In a few minutes, I saw the lights on the service station. I swung into the open space in front of the pumps, and I stopped. There was a rumbling of thunder in the west. The storm was moving up fast. There was another car, a coupe, parked at the pump. But there wasn't anybody in it. And I didn't see any attendant around either. I pressed the horn button. No one answered. No one came out of the office. Still no response. Everything seemed so quiet and suddenly ominous. I found myself shivering. I had a curious feeling that someone was watching me. I've got to get away from here fast. It's starting to work again. It won't start. It won't start. For a long time, I sat behind the wheel, listening. Listening for the sound of footsteps stealing up behind the car. There were none. Then I could bear it no longer. I had to get out of the car. I had to see what was in that office. I opened the door of the car and stepped down on the gravel. Anybody in there? No answer. I clenched my fists and stepped inside. There on the floor at my feet lay the body of a man. His mechanic's jumper was stained red with blood, and his throat was cut from ear to ear. How long I stood there, I'll never know. I was petrified, unable to move, unable to take my eyes from the bloody body. What's that? Someone coming downstairs. Hartley? It must be Hartley, the killer. He must have been hiding somewhere upstairs. I've got to get away outside. But how? My car won't run. That other car, the coupe, I could jump into that. Yes. If I could reach that coupe before he comes down.
Anything wrong, sister?
Too late.
Anything I can do for you, sister?
Yes. It's my car. It won't start. I thought someone here might help me.
Sorry. There doesn't seem to be anybody around. That's my coupe over there. I stopped for gas and no one came out, so I went in and looked around.
Did you find anyone?
There isn't a living soul in there.
Oh.
You look kind of tired.
Oh, no, I'm all right.
My name is Taylor.
Oh?
John Taylor.
I'm Linda Dixon.
Linda Dixon, huh? Glad to know you. Traveling far tonight?
Well, I'm going to Carstairs. Seven Lakes Hotel. They're expecting me.
Now, what do you know about that?
What?
Carstairs is the town I'm heading for, too. Isn't that a coincidence?
Yes, I'm sure it is.
Your car won't run. Tell you what, we'll put your baggage in my car and I'll give you a lift to Carstairs. You can send for your car in the morning.
I'll
have your bag switched in a jiffy.
Please, no, I would rather not...
There we are. All switched. Now, come on. Get in here.
He took my arm and helped me into the coupe. His hand was strong. His grip was hard. It hurt me.
There you are. Snug as a bug in a rug.
We drove away into the night, leaving behind us the dead man in the service station. A few minutes after we left that service station, we drove through sheets of rain. I sat stiff and tense beside the man who called himself John Taylor. He had both hands on the wheel, and he stared out through the windshield. My eyes focused on something on his right hand. It was a stain, a small stain, but it was wet and red. I couldn't take my eyes off it.
What are you looking at?
Well, oh, nothing. Nothing at all.
Think I'll turn on the radio. Did you know there's been a jailbreak?
Hartley is 5'10", very dark hair. Don't be fooled by his pleasant manner. He is a killer by instinct.
I looked at the man beside me.
Helen Hearn is a clever and dangerous woman. 5'3", red hair, very pretty.
I caught Taylor looking at me out of the corner of his eye. What are you looking at?
At your hair. It's red.
There was a streak of lightning, and looking out of the rain-swept window, I glimpsed a signpost. The lightning illuminated the sign, and my heart skipped a beat at what I saw. That sign we just passed.
What about it?
Well, it said Kerhonkson ahead. We're going the wrong way. We should be on the Carstairs Road, not on the Kerhonkson Road.
That's funny. Must have taken the wrong turn.
Well, aren't you going to turn back?
Sure. Whatever you say. We'll turn right around and go back. Uh-oh. We're in the ditch.
In the ditch?
That's no good. She won't budge. Well, it looks like we're stuck here for the night. You look scared.
Oh, no. I think I'd better get out and walk. Perhaps there's a house nearby.
Walk in this weather?
Oh, I don't mind the weather, really. I don't...
You can't walk in this storm?
Well, nevertheless, I'm going to try.
Not on your life.
What do you mean?
You're staying right here till I get the car out of the ditch. You get pneumonia walking in this storm.
But
Let's see. Where's that flashlight? Ah, here we are. Got some tools in the trunk compartment. You stay put. Stay right where you are.
I heard him open the trunk in the back. I listened for further sounds, but there was nothing. I didn't hear him moving there. I didn't hear any tools. I had to find out what he was doing. Slowly, carefully, I got my door open. I stepped out into the rain and sneaked back toward the rear. I saw him there, not moving, in front of the open trunk compartment, bending over with a flashlight in his hand. The ray of light was focused on something curled up inside. It wasn't baggage or tools. It was a woman's body. Just then he saw me. He snapped the flashlight off, but not before I caught a glimpse of red hair. Then I must have fainted. When I came to, I found myself seated inside the car again. My face and hair were wet. My clothes were dripping. John Taylor was driving. His face, as he stared ahead through the night, was dark and bleak. The storm was over. Night was quiet.
Oh, so you're awake again.
I don't feel well.
Is it because of what's in the trunk compartment?
She's dead.
I told you not to get out of the car.
What are you going to do with me?
What do you think?
Please.
Sorry, sister. Got to take your medicine.
Oh, no.
Better not make any trouble. I'll try to make it as easy for you as I can.
They say that when a person loses all hope, subconsciously, he seeks refuge in sleep. That's what must have happened to me. I must have dozed, or perhaps I fainted, I don't know. But I awoke with a start at the sound of brakes. I sat up straight, and saw that we stopped in front of a small fieldstone house. Why are we stopping here?
I'm out of gas.
Oh.
Come on. We're going in.
The sign on the door said, Roger Bryce, M.D. A doctor's house. I began to feel a spark of hope. There might be a chance.
I'll do the talking. Is that clear?
Yes.
Where's the bell? Oh. Must be awake. There's a light in the parlor.
How do you do?
Good evening, Dr. Bryce.
Yes, can I help you?
I'm terribly sorry to disturb you, Doctor, but my sister and I were heading for Carstairs, and we seem to have gotten lost, and we're out of gas.
His sister? He was passing us off as brother and sister. Now I knew why he hadn't cut my throat as he had that service station man's. He was carrying me for protection. I was his passport through the police cordon. His sister.
I'm afraid I can't be of much help to you. I'm 7 miles from the nearest town, and I haven't any spare gasoline. Come in, won't you?
Why, yes, thank you, we will.
I wonder if I could offer you my hospitality for the night.
Oh, that would be imposing.
Not at all. I have 2 rooms that aren't being used.
Oh, really?
Oh, come. I insist.
I'd hoped for a chance to talk to Dr. Bryce alone. Just a word to warn him. But Taylor never left us alone for a minute. He insisted on coming into my room to make sure, he said, that it was comfortable enough for me. Then he took the doctor by the arm and went out with him.
Good night, sis, and sweet dreams.
I was alone, free of the presence of John Taylor. I had another lease on life. I waited, my heart pounding. Give them both a chance to retire. Then I slipped off my shoes, and in my stocking feet, I stole across the room and inched my door open. Slowly, carefully, I stepped out into the corridor and turned right toward the doctor's room.
What's the matter, sister? You weren't thinking of going anywhere, were you?
I wanted a drink of water.
A drink of water, huh? In case you didn't know it, there's a water pitcher on your dresser.
Oh, I didn't see it.
Good night, sister.
I turned around and went back into my room. It was no use. If I attempted to warn Dr. Bryce, Taylor would probably kill us both. I turned out the light in my room. I knew he was watching my transom. Then I lay down on the bed. How long I lay there, I don't know. Perhaps I slept, perhaps not. But I heard that slight creak as my door began to inch open. Blood chilled in my veins. Slowly the door came open. I lay fascinated, unable to move. Vaguely, I saw the outline of the hand and the knife it held. I wanted to scream, but I couldn't. Slowly, he came toward the bed. Now he stands over me. He raises the knife. I rolled over on the bed just as the knife slashed down. I rolled off the bed and cowered in a corner. That horrible figure came around the bed after me with a knife upraised. Help! Dr. Price, help me!
All right, you
don't depress. Give me. All right, I was there in the corner. They fought all over the room in the dark. I had no strength.
To move.
To think. Not even to hope. All the life seemed to have gone dead in my veins.
And then. Then it was over.
But who? Who had won? In the dark, I strained my eyes to see. There was a vague shape on the floor. And another, weaving around the room. Who? Which one was it? Doctor! Dr. Bryce! Is that you?
No, Linda. It isn't Dr. Bryce. It's I. John Taylor.
John Taylor. Standing there at the light switch. And on the floor lay Dr. Bryce unconscious, with a long gash in his head.
I had to hit him with a water pitcher.
My eyes turned to Dr. Bryce. I saw the knife still gripped in his right hand.
That's Hartley, Linda. Lee Hartley, the killer.
It was he who came in here with a knife?
Right. I was down the cellar just now. The real Dr. Bryce is down there. Dead. And this fellow posed as Bryce when we came to the house.
Then you're not Hartley.
No. Isn't that rich? All the time you thought I was Lee Hartley, and I thought you were Helen Hearn. On account of your red hair.
But the body, the red-haired woman.
That's Helen Hearn. This fellow must have killed her back at the service station and stuffed her body in my trunk compartment while I was inside.
That all happened last summer. In time, I think I'll manage to forget that night of horror. But it won't be soon. Sometimes in the night I dream that I see that awful figure with the knife poised above my throat. And I wake up screaming. But then John takes me in his arms and holds me tight and tells me that everything's all right. You see, I'm Mrs. John Taylor now.
Valley 103.1 FM.
And now the Whistler's strange story. The Stray Dream.
Chris Claggett was never meant to commit murder. He knew it the minute he did it. But of course it was too late then. The minute it was over and he looked down at Steve Robinson lying there on the floor, he knew that nothing would be the same afterwards. That no matter how perfect it was, no matter how thoroughly he outsmarted the police, the big battle was going to take place inside himself, in the middle of his mind. He felt it even stronger 2 hours afterward as he paced the floor of his apartment, waiting for the telephone call that was bound to come sooner or later, trying to read and throwing the magazine aside, mixing drinks and pouring them down the sink, lighting cigarettes he was too nervous to smoke, waiting. Waiting. Kathy was bound to call. She had to discover it sooner or later. 5 minutes of two, the night before Easter, Steve working late at the florist's shop. But she'd know he couldn't be working that late. She'd go down to see what was keeping him. And then she'd call. Chris was ready for it an hour ago with just the right amount of surprise and shock. But now, at 2:05, he didn't know. The waiting was getting him. In the silence. There it is, Chris.
No, no, wait a minute. Let it ring. Now. Hello?
Chris, this is Kathy.
Kathy, dear, you know better than to call me at this time.
Chris, listen to me. Something terrible has happened.
Huh? What's the matter?
Steve is... He's dead, Chris.
What?
He was working late tonight at the flower shop. When he didn't come home, I went down and found him. I just called the police.
Police?
Yes, he's been murdered, Chris.
Good Lord.
Can you come down right away?
Of course. Let me call the night editor first. I'll be right over.
Well, Chris, at least the waiting is over. You carried it off pretty well, didn't you? Just the right amount of surprise and shock. But there's a strange new feeling inside, in the pit of your stomach, something you've never felt before. And the sight of Steve lying where you left him on the floor of the back room of the flower shop, surrounded by banks of Easter lilies and roses, brings the feeling to a dangerous pitch. You're thankful for your training. You don't even have to think as you watch Lieutenant Nelson. You're a police reporter. Your pencil moves automatically, taking down everything you see and hear.
Well, what do you think, Chief?
Probably struck from behind as he was working at this bench.
Yeah, but how did the guy get in?
Didn't have to get in, Gibson. Could have reached in this open window. Well, Claggett.
Yeah?
You'd better go and file your story. I don't think anything else will break tonight. Just photographs, fingerprint men, and that sort of thing.
All right, Lieutenant.
It's tough, I know. All murders are tough. I think the flowers here are what make this one so horrible. All this beauty and ugliness in the same little room. He was a friend of yours, wasn't he?
Yeah. I'd better go, Lieutenant. What'll I tell Mrs. Robinson?
Tell her I think she's had enough for one night. I'll see her tomorrow afternoon.
Okay.
Chris?
It's pretty terrible, Kathy.
What did Lieutenant Nelson say?
You can go now. He'll see you tomorrow afternoon.
Oh.
I gotta file my story. That's something, isn't it? Me filing a story about Steve?
Please, Chris.
I'm sorry.
I know. Chris, I don't know what I'd do if you weren't here.
I'll always be here, Fee. Remember that, will you?
Sure, Chris. I'll remember.
Just the right balance, Chris. Just enough grief and just enough business as usual. The outside battle is going well, isn't it? Tonight, the reporter, carrying on in spite of everything. Tomorrow, a little less grief, a little more business as usual. At the city editor's desk, for example.
Oh, just a minute, Holloway.
I tell you, I'm right, Chief. The door into the sales room was locked.
You're sure?
Of course I'm sure.
Why?
I remember.
That's the trouble. You think you remember. Where's Chris?
Over there at the counter.
All right, we'll see. Oh, Chris?
Yeah?
Come here a minute. I'll show you what I mean, Holloway.
What's the matter, Chief?
Oh, Holloway here is doing a feature on the murder. He says the door into the sales room was locked. Check it, will you?
Yeah, just a second. Let me see. Oh, here we are. The door had a Yale lock, but it was on the latch and the bolt above it was open.
Yeah, see?
Now, wait a minute. There was a triangular rubber doorstop against it on the workroom side, so it couldn't have been used as an exit. That's it.
See what I mean, Holloway? He doesn't trust his memory. He takes everything down.
Well, that didn't seem very important.
How do you know it's not important? Take it down anyway.
But I was so busy.
So was Chris. Doesn't matter how busy you are. A first-class man makes notes without even thinking about it. Right, Chris?
Yeah. Was so.
You see, Holloway, that's what I mean by a reporter.
Yes, Chris, you're an expert, a precision machine. accurate to a millionth of an inch, never wrong on a fact, never guilty of bungling errors like the other reporters. And because you used the same methods to kill Steve Robinson, the outside battle was over before it started. 3 months later, the case is shelved. Kathy's yours, Chris. She's Mrs. Claggett now. You have what she set out to get. Why don't you forget about the battle that's still going on inside?
Chris?
Yeah?
Chris, where are the roses I put on the mantle?
Roses?
Yeah, in the green vase on the mantle, dear.
Oh, yeah, well, they're kind of wilted. I threw them out.
Wilted? Oh, Chris, I just got them from the florist yesterday.
Why must we always have flowers, Kathy?
Well, because I like
them. Well, I don't.
What's the matter, dear? Ever since we got back from our
I just don't like flowers, Kathy. Is there anything wrong with that?
Oh, don't jump at me.
I'm sorry.
What's wrong, Chris? You used to send me flowers before Steve and I...
I know it. You don't have to tell me. It's very simple, Kathy. I don't like flowers because they remind me of Steve.
That's why I want them.
Huh?
They remind me of Steve, too, Chris. I like to think of him once in a while.
Why?
Because I loved him.
Kathy, don't you understand? I was fond of him, too. He was my best friend. But we're not living in the past. Keeping him in front of us all the time isn't going to help.
Well, is that why you objected to living here?
Of course. He's here in the house with us. Everywhere I turn, I see him. Knick-knacks of his all over the place. His picture on your dresser.
Well, I thought you understood when we were married.
I guess I didn't. Oh, excuse me, Kathy. I'm going to bed.
And so you go to bed, Chris, but you don't sleep for hours. You haven't really slept since the murder, have you? And tonight it's worse than ever. Your mind's like a spinning top. You aren't conscious of the exact moment it begins, but suddenly you find yourself in the press section of a courtroom covering a trial. It's a courtroom different from any you've ever seen. Roses are everywhere. They cover the walls. They flow down over the judge's bench and up the aisle. The scent of them is almost sickening. There's a strange cold feeling inside you as you take in all the details. The judge, the jury, the counsel for the defense, and the prosecution. Then your heart almost stops as you realize that the man on trial for murder is you.
Wait a minute. Let me explain. You got me all wrong. No, no, listen. It's a dream. What am I doing out of bed? Kathy. She heard me. No. Still asleep. Thank heaven.
More coffee, Chris?
No, thanks.
Oh, you usually have 2 cups.
I think I'll cut down a little. I didn't sleep too well last night.
Oh?
Must have been something I ate. You were hearing tossing around?
No, I was dead to the world.
I had the feeling when I woke up this morning I'd been talking in my sleep. You remember hearing anything?
No. You must have something on your conscience, dear.
Yeah.
Well, that's a relief, isn't it, Chris? It's a good thing Kathy sleeps soundly. You don't remember what you said, but no matter what it was, it would have sounded bad under the circumstances. You feel better that afternoon as you take Kathy downtown for a beauty appointment and get into the swing of things at the office. Then that evening...
Don't you think it might be a good idea to call off our bridge date with the Bartons tonight? You seem so tired.
Yeah, I could use some sleep.
You know, I've been thinking all afternoon about last night.
Huh? What do you mean?
This morning when you asked me, I didn't remember anything unusual, but this afternoon the strangest feeling came.
You mean you heard me?
Heard what?
Well, you remember I was telling you I had some crazy idea. I'd been talking in my sleep.
Well, no, I didn't hear anything.
Oh,
I was just sitting here reading when I suddenly realized I had a funny dream.
Yeah?
Well, maybe it's because of the roses.
Roses?
Yes, you remember we talked about them before going
to bed. You mean you dreamed about roses?
Well, yes, all mixed up with something about a trial and a courtroom.
A court? Kathy, are you sure?
What's the matter, Chris?
Is that all?
Well, that's all I can remember. Chris, what's the matter?
I don't know.
Well, Chris, for the first time in your life, you're beginning to lose faith in yourself. The shadow of a doubt is slowly making itself felt inside you. You keep telling yourself it must be a coincidence. How else could you and Kathy have had the same dream at the same time? A courtroom filled with roses. Yet she couldn't have pulled that one out of the air. It's too fantastic. It can't be coincidence. Yet what else can it be? Once again, you lie awake for hours trying to find an explanation. And then, just as before, it's all there in front of you, the same courtroom, just as you saw it last night from the press section. You're sitting there just as before, watching the witnesses, listening to statements by the attorneys. But this time, instead of roses, the courtroom is filled with Easter lilies. The same variety you found in the florist's shop. Then slowly it melts away, and you lapse into the restful blackness of sleep.
Oh, 7 o'clock. Kathy? Kathy?
Yes, Chris?
Where are you?
I'm in the living room, dear. I'm coming. What's the matter?
When'd you get up?
4 o'clock.
4? Why?
Oh, I couldn't sleep.
You mean you had another dream?
I don't know what's the matter with me, Chris. It's so... so real.
Did you have another one? Tell me!
Why, Chris...
I'm sorry. Tell me about it.
It was just like before. The courtroom and the judge, but...
But what?
It wasn't roses this time, Chris. It was Easter lilies.
You want to see me, Chief?
Yeah, I just wanted to talk to you for a minute. What's wrong, Chris?
Hmm?
What's eating you?
Well, I don't know.
For years I point you out to all the Cubs as the shining example. Everything a star reporter should be. And suddenly your stuff starts coming in so garbled I can't use
well, there's
it.
There's nothing wrong, Chief.
Don't hand me that. I know you too well. Something's eating your heart out and I want to know what it is.
Well, it's none of your business.
It is my business. When the best man on my staff turns in a story on the shakeup at the City Hall full of scrambled references to roses and Easter lilies, you can bet your shirt it's my business.
What was that?
You heard me.
I guess I've just been working too hard.
Is that all?
Yeah, Chief, that's all.
I doubt it. You've been through a lot tougher grinds than this, and I've never seen you fall to pieces yet. What's the matter, Chris? You look like a ghost.
I told you that there's nothing the matter. I just need a rest.
All right, then, take one. A long one.
How long?
As long as you want, on full salary. And don't come back until you can write a straight story.
Holloway?
Chris.
Holloway, didn't you do a story once on a professor over at the university? Something about experiments on extrasensory perception or thought transference or something?
Yeah. His name was Duncan, I think.
What did he do? What was it all about?
I don't remember very well. I think they'd line up a batch of students at one end of a room and have them concentrate on numbers. Yeah, that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And then another group would try and write the numbers down.
What's his name again?
Duncan. Charles Duncan.
I really don't like to appear too definite on this, Mr. Claggett. Nothing has been proved conclusively.
You mean there's no such thing as thought transference, Professor Duncan?
It's hard to say. It's a very unscientific attitude to take. Assuming that two minds are in tune, so to speak. But we have found rare cases in which there seems to be no other conclusion.
I see. Does distance
seem to make any difference?
Well, yes. I would say it cuts down the possibilities considerably.
Uh-huh.
Thanks, Professor. That's the only way you can explain it, isn't it, Chris? You and Kathy must be one of the rare cases the professor talked about. There's no other answer. It's maddening to have carried it off so perfectly, to have won the outside battle so completely, only to lose your grip on the secret while you're asleep and the bars are down. And there's only one defense, isn't there, Chris? He said that distance did make a difference.
Hello, darling.
What in the world are you doing home so early?
Oh, I had a talk with Jones. He says I need a rest.
Well, he's right.
So how would you like to go away for a couple of weeks?
Where?
Tahoe, maybe.
Why, I think that's a wonderful idea, Chris.
Could you be ready this afternoon?
Well, I don't know. It's a rush order.
Oh, there wouldn't be much packing. We'd just knock around our old clothes.
Well, I'll try.
Great. Great. I knew you would.
What about you?
Well, I was about to tell you. I'll have to join you later. There's some things I got to clear up, you know.
Oh. Why can't I wait? We could go up together.
Now, don't be that way, darling. I want you to have it all ready for me when I arrive. I'll get your reservations on the 3 o'clock train. How about it?
Well, all right, Chris.
Great. Well, gee, look at the time. We got to hurry. Come on, I'll help you.
Well, Chris, she's out of the way for the time being. You're relieved for the moment. But the old tension returns that night as you lie down to sleep in Steve's house among Steve's things. She's at Lake Tahoe, Chris, 250 miles away. You keep telling yourself that distance will make the difference, just as the professor said. You try not to think of it as you lie there. Try to make your mind a blank. But the same impressions come back again and again. He's there, Chris. Steve is there in the courtroom with the flowers all around him. You sit in the press section. You can't take your eyes off him. He's smiling at you, Chris, as he gets slowly out of his seat and walks toward the witness stand, stepping carefully over the rows of roses and Easter lilies. He's going to talk, Chris. You realize there's no other way out now. Then you find yourself on your feet, shouting your lungs out, telling the court you killed him.
I killed him! I admit it! I can't stand this any longer. I killed him. Because I loved his wife, I thought I'd be happy, but I was wrong. I don't care anymore. I don't care. Good Lord. Oh, good Lord.
Martin's Cove, Lake Tahoe.
Hello, this is Christopher Claggett. I'd like to speak to Mrs. Claggett, please.
Just a moment.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, sir. She doesn't answer.
All right, I'll call back.
She doesn't answer, Mr. Claggett. I'll tell her you called.
Hello? Hello, Kathy.
Hello, Chris.
Where have you been, Kathy? I've been calling you since 8 this morning. It's 4 o'clock.
I know it.
Why didn't you answer?
I couldn't. I was so upset by... Chris, I had the dream again. It was awful.
You're lying.
No, Chris,
it's impossible.
No.
You couldn't have.
It was your trial, Chris. Steve was there testifying.
Stop it, Kathy.
I tell you, Chris, it was real. I could swear I was right there in the courtroom.
I said stop it. Listen, Kathy, listen to me. You've got to let me explain. Don't do anything. Don't... see anybody. I'll be on the next train. It leaves Berkeley in an hour.
There's only one way out now, Chris. It's you or Kathy. You did it once and got away with it. You're wondering now whether you can do it again. But there's no alternative, is there? It's you or Kathy. That's why at 5 minutes past midnight you're at Martin's Cove walking through the darkness behind the row of hotel cabins. You know Kathy's in number 16 and at this hour she'll be sleeping. You keep well in the shadows of the trees at the edge of the cabin area. 14. 15. 16, this is the one. The window's open. You can see her head on the pillow. You pull out your revolver. You wish there were some other way, but there isn't. Just a moment now.
Hey! What are you...
Drop that gun!
I got him! Let me go!
I said drop that gun! All right, Claggett.
Nelson!
You can come along peacefully, or you can come feet first. At the moment, I'm not particular.
So you finally lost the inside battle, didn't you, Chris? There in the shadows with Gibson pinning your arms to your sides and Lieutenant Nelson standing in front of you with a gun in his hand, you realize it's all over. You had the feeling from the first, didn't you? From the moment you killed Steve Robinson in the rear of his flower shop, you knew it was a losing battle. But it was too late to change anything.
You should have known that it wouldn't go, Chris.
How did you know?
Your wife called us.
Thought so.
Not until you confessed, of course.
Confessed?
Yes, all written out pretty as you please. 10 pages of it in your own handwriting. Garbled up with a lot of nonsense about roses and Easter lilies.
What are you talking about?
You didn't really think that you and your wife were dreaming the same dream, did you? My error. You must have. Or you wouldn't have tried to kill her. She wasn't asleep on that first night, Chris. She watched you get out of bed, take one of your spare notebooks out of the dresser drawer.
I was writing. It was real.
Well, the writing was real, at least. You almost had a stump, though, when you sent her up here. We had to wait 3 hours until you went out for lunch to get into your house and find the notebook. She couldn't answer you when you called, of course, until we got to her by telephone and told her what she had dreamed last night.
Well, that's it, isn't it?
You were too good a reporter, Chris. A guy who can take notes without thinking should never take a crack at murder. Especially if he walks in his sleep.
In the mountain, bravely fighting the battle of time, is a dear one who's weathered life's sorrows. 'Tis that silver-haired daddy of mine. If I could recall all the heartaches dear old daddy, I've caused you to bear. If I could erase those lines from your face and bring back the bow to your hair, if God would but grant me the power just to turn back the pages of time, I'd give all I own if I could but atone to that silver-haired daddy of mine. I know it's too late, dear old daddy, to repay for the sorrow and care. Though dear mother is waiting in heaven just to comfort and solace you there. If I could recall all the heartaches dear old daddy, I'd cause you to bear. If I could erase those lines from your face and bring back the gold to your hair, if God would but grant me the power just to turn back the pages of time,
I'd give all I own if I could but atone to that silver-haired daddy of mine.
Sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.